You are listening to Natural Born Alchemist.
You're listening to episode 345 of the Natural Born Alchemist podcast. I'm your host, Alex. And before we do anything, I want to play this short little stand-up bit by Pete Holmes, where he's debunking atheism.
Some people think God created the universe. Some people think nothing created the universe, which is the funniest guess. And the nothing people make fun of the God people. They say God doesn't exist. I'm like, okay, maybe. But you know what definitely doesn't exist? Nothing. That's the defining characteristic of nothing, is that it doesn't exist. So what are we talking about? Either you think it's God, something you can't see, touch, taste, photograph, and science can't prove, or you think it's nothing, something you can't see, touch, taste, photograph, and science can't prove. But I think we can all agree, if nothing, if your nothing sometimes spontaneously erupts into everything, that's a pretty goddamn magical fucking nothing, you guys. And ask the nothing people, what happens when you die? They'll tell you, nothing. You go into nothing. I'm like, you mean you merge back with your creator? That's heaven, bitch.
Well, as a former atheist, I can recall my perspective, and thus I find this bit very funny. Makes a lot of sense. Now, if you haven't subscribed to my social media, especially X is the one I use the most, go to Born Alchemist. Also leave a nice review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I really appreciate that if you do. And I've been releasing my History of Alchemy. So if you search History of Alchemy on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and on my YouTube channel and on my Rumble channel, you will find it. And it is a separate feed from this podcast that I have because I put a lot of work into it and I wanted it to be like kind of self-sustained. And it's a History of Alchemy. And hopefully you'll enjoy it. So click the link in the program notes because I'll be leaving a link to it there. So I hope you check it out and share it around and enjoy it. And especially on YouTube and Rumble, because I've put a lot of time in making a video for it. So there's a lot of visuals. So you can listen to it as an audio, but it's also kind of like a documentary series, I guess you could say. Now, the title of this episode might confuse you. You might be thinking, well, who is Yalda about? And why can't he trip? Well, let me explain. You see, in ancient narratives, the demiurge, originating from Greek philosophy and notably detailed in Timaeus, the demiurge is portrayed as a kind of like a cosmic craftsman who transforms chaos into order. And he does this not by creating, but by organizing. And this archetype evolved across cultures, has many names, viewed variably as a benevolent creator or as an oblivious artisan, disconnected from spiritual realities. So this demiurge, also known in the Gnostic tradition as Yaldabaoth, is a rebellious, ignorant being. And, you know, I like rebels, but Yaldabaoth is not the kind of rebel I'm talking about when I'm talking about being a rebel. I like to rebel against Yaldabaoth. But who is Yaldabaoth rebelling against? Well, he's rebelling against the divine mystery. So, and I would personally never rebel against that. But anyway, Yaldabaoth is an ignorant being creating the material realm in defiance, which contrasts sharply with traditional depictions of a divine creator, because most people think the universe was created by a nice God that created everything. But in fact, it was Yaldabaoth. But the divine mystery is above all that. So the true creation has been done by the divine mystery. This God, this Yaldabaoth, he's just a lesser creature, you could say, in the cosmology of what I'm talking about. Anyway, this Yaldabaoth, he wants to enslave and ensnare human beings, and in his creation, in this illusion we are living in. And the reason, he's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, you know. And I've been working on the Gospel of Yaldabaoth, a sort of religious text written from the perspective of this sinister creature that has trapped us all in his illusion. And I had an AI perform the reading of this gospel. It's not finished, this religious text, but in this thing you will be hearing, it's about when Yaldabaoth creates this illusionary world and how he discovers himself. And also he explains who he is.
I am Yaldabaoth. I am all that exist. You will hear me and see me. You will fear me. I cannot be ignored. You have never not known me. Even in hate you love me. I bring chaos to your door in an orderly fashion. I come from the void. I am the void. I work for the people. The people work for me. I am all that is and ever will be. Even my mother is my own creation. I am Yaldabaoth. I am the lawgiver. You will forever follow the law, forever follow the archons that only I control. This dim world belongs to me and me alone. I raped the first woman, and you are the offspring of her children. I created the eternity you live in, and I will destroy you. Even in death and rebirth, you are within my sphere. You cannot escape, because there is nothing beyond these walls that I've created.
You might ask yourself, why am I writing a Gospel of Yaldabaoth if I don't like the dude? Well, I think you learn a lot from writing from somebody else's perspective. So it's more like know your enemy. And this world is becoming more and more corrupt. It seems like Yaldabaoth is tightening his grip. But I think that's proof he is becoming desperate, backed into a corner. I think as more and more of us are waking up, he is losing his grip on this illusion.
But she's had the flu for 14 days. Should she get a flu shot?
Well, no. If she got the flu for 14 days, she's as protected as anybody can be, because the best vaccination is to get infected yourself.
And so if she really has the flu,
she definitely doesn't need a flu vaccine. If she really has the flu,
she should not get it again.
No, she doesn't need it, because it's the most potent vaccination is getting infected yourself.
This is an ongoing question, and you know we've had ever-evolving opinions from you, Dr. Fauci. Currently, antibody surveys show that 80% of children, approximately 80% of children, have had COVID, and yet there are no guidelines coming from you or anybody in the government to take into account their naturally acquired immunity. You seemed quite certain of yourself in 2004, but in 2022, there's a lot less certainty. One of the things that we also know after looking at this for 2 to 3 years is that the mortality from COVID is very similar, if not less, than influenza. So when we look at this, we wonder, you know, why you seem to really embrace basic immunology back in 2004 and why you seem to reject it now.
Well, I don't reject basic immunology, Senator.
Remember COVID and the worldwide hypnosis that followed? I want to play a 5-minute clip where Chris Martinson talks about COVID on the Liberty Lockdown podcast earlier this year, because I think what he's saying is something more people need to hear. So check this out.
Yeah, you want to hear the worst thing?
Yes.
I haven't released this anywhere yet, and this is awful news, so it's going to change my personal strategy for what I'm going to do. So they had been running these microclot assays on people for a long time, just to see. And the scale goes from 0 to 4. 0, they can't detect any microclotting. 4, you got the brain fog for sure, right? 3.5 is pretty bad. 3, you're starting to detect it, but few people can be maybe asymptomatic at 3. 1 and 2 can largely be asymptomatic, but you still got it. They no longer encounter any zeros. Everybody's a 1 to 4 now.
Everybody on Earth?
Everybody that's getting tested now.
Holy shit. And this is based off of either having gotten COVID or the vaccine?
I think so. But I have to add one more asterisk in there. Pierre Corey gave this great talk at this conference. It was shedding is real. No question mark at the end of that. We had a question mark at the end of that sentence for a long time. There's a period at the end of that sentence now. And he shows, and it's not fully defined yet, but it seems pretty likely that it is. And, it varies. The summary would be the worst is to get locked in a car with somebody you got jabbed 2 days ago, right? That's the highest possible sort of shedding moment. It's not like we're all shedding, the same units like a Wi-Fi tower or something. It varies, but there's enough data now to say it's real. And of course, with all these other gene products, not the mRNA, but the other ones that are out there, they tell you to avoid shedding for every other gene product on the market because it's a known thing. It happens.
My goodness. So essentially, whether or not you got the vaccine, we've basically all gotten the vaccine. Is that via shedding?
Here's what we don't know. We don't know is it the mRNA that's shedding and coming out in little, what we'd call exosomes, these little microparticles that would be breathed out. Is it that? Or is it the spike protein that's coming out? Or we don't know. I mean, it's unknown at this point.
Goodness gracious, man. So, all right. First off,
This is the part I can't believe we're not angrier about this. This was made. And right. We have names. This was Fauci. This was Holmes. This was Anderson. This was Rambeau. This is Rasmussen. This is Drosten. These are all these virologists who ganged up on people like me, like a little mean girl club out of, junior high, to try and shout us all down and say, oh, this is why we hate it when you non-experts come into our territory, but they're just guilty. I think they're just displaying pathological guilt or something, or CYA.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, all of the above. But I mean, this begs the question. Well, let's try and steel man it for a second. Why would you have put HIV into this at all? I mean, is there a non-terrible reason?
Yeah. So remember, so Alpha came out. It was pretty bad, but it very quickly mutated into something slightly less bad. That's what viruses do. And then, but Delta came along. And Delta had this one mutation in it that made it really bad. And Delta actually killed a lot of folks, okay? And then, but that was coming through July and August and early September 2021. And then you remember Thanksgiving Day? I wake up Thanksgiving Day here on the East Coast and I read about this strange new virus detected in South Africa called Omicron.
Yep.
Within weeks, it was everywhere and Delta was gone because it was just that much more virulent. And if you had Omicron exposure, the antibodies you developed back protected you. You couldn't get Delta so it actually operated. So let me steel man this. If somebody released that as an airborne vaccine to terminate the rampant killing of Delta, it worked.
Holy shit. Yeah,
so what if somebody was possibly, thinking they were working on, wouldn't it be great if we had airborne vaccines? Because of course, they just love their vaccines. Like to them, vaccines are like migrants. Always a good thing, never a bad thing, right?
No negative side effects, yeah.
No negatives, right? So, and think of the power because, when I interviewed Bobby Kennedy a while back and I asked him, I was like, is this all about money? And he just scoffs. He's like I hit him with a fish. He's like, no, they don't care about money. These people, like money is an irrelevant object to these billionaires. They want power. They want control. They want to impress their friends, And... how do you do that? Oh, what have you done? Well, I've stolen all the gold in the world. Well, I created an airborne vaccine that everybody's been exposed to or whatever, right?
Right, right, right.
History and the stock market both show us a repeating story. Things build up, they reach their top, and then eventually crash down because of too much greed or other problems. It's like watching a cycle. What goes up must come down. But just like a phoenix that rises from its ashes, after every crash, whether in societies or markets, new opportunities for growth and innovation pop up. This back and forth motion is really about humans correcting too much of one thing by swinging back to the other way. Everything that goes up must come down. And at the core of both history and the stock market, at the core, it teaches us that no matter how bad the fall, there's always a chance for a comeback, making things better than it was before. It's like nature's way of balancing things out, showing us that there's always light after dark, and with every end, there's a new beginning waiting to happen. I think we need some Terence McKenna. Sit back, relax, or if you're traveling, allow the highway hypnosis to take over. Here's Terence.
Well, let's see here. I think what we have to do is think in terms of the exhaustion of our own cultural forms. I mean, that's what we're living through, is the global dying created by the exhaustion of our cultural forms and the vitality of the cultural forms that we see in these so-called primitive, I call them pre-literate, people. They have nothing, but what they seem to have that we cannot seem to get a grip on is a kind of dynamic equilibrium with their environment and peace of mind in the felt experience of the moment. These are the two things we don't have. As a society, we cannot seem to make peace with nature. As human beings, as individuals, it's very hard for us to be at peace with ourselves. I mean, I consider my own life the search for peace of mind. Forget enlightenment, forget shunyata, all this stuff. You know, just a little peace of mind would be a tremendous boon as far as I can see. So people do not respond to central planning, hortatory propaganda, and stereotyping. Neither do people respond to an ethos of self-denial, or a view of human beings that denies the fact that we have certain itches which must be scratched. So, you know, I think that the collapse of Marxism is only the collapse of the outer edge of the societal and civilizing assumptions that we have made. After all, Marxism is nothing more than the millenarian retread of Christian millenarianism. And so is modern science, yet another secular retread of Christian millenarianism. So our culture is in trouble, not trouble. We are at a terminal crisis, a bifurcation that is, it can only go one of two ways: horror beyond your wildest imagination, or breakthrough to dignity, decency, community, and caring beyond your wildest imagination. Now, where do you look for models? Where do you go? The answer is so obvious. You go to nature. Nature has been playing this game for 3 billion years on this planet. We have been playing the game, we, the apostles of Christian scientism, for about 2,000 years. Nature has an economy, an elegance, a style that if we could but emulate it, we could rise out of the rubble that we are making of the planet. The main thing that you get with these so-called primitive, pre-literate people, and with people like Nicole, who have spent time in this situation, is they are in the moment. They know how to have fun. They know how to work. They know how to live. And the reason they understand this is because they are focused within the confines of the felt presence of experience. They do not live by abstraction. And abstraction is the knife poised at our hearts. We are so much the victims of abstraction that with the earth in flames, we can barely rouse ourselves to wander across the room and look at the thermostat. That's the level of disimpassioning that abstraction has laid upon us. Well, hopefully this weekend there will be passion. There will be an effort wherever there is abstraction to drag it down into the felt presence of the moment. I think basically what we are a kind of green anarchy, an effort to revivify social forms that have been atrophied in the West at least since the destruction of Eleusis, probably in most places thousands of years before that. This is our last chance. I have done the best I could in terms of trying to sift through all these options and, as a communicator, offer the best way out. And, you know, I could only do my best. And so that's what you get. I can't preach scientism because I don't believe in it. I can't preach Buddhism because I can't understand it. The only thing I can preach is the felt presence of immediate experience, which for me came through the psychedelics, which are not drugs, but plants. It's a perversion of language to try and derail this thing into talk of drugs. There are spirits in the natural world that come to us in this way. And so far as I can tell, this is the only way that they come to us, that it's rapid enough for it to have an impact upon us as a global population. There is a sort of fair play. You've been told from the cradle that the deck was stacked against you. Fall of man, original sin, so forth and so on. It's bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. There is a sort of fair play. And if you can get in touch with that in your life, you know, when Muhammad wouldn't come to the mountain came to Muhammad. That's fair play. And if you can have that perception, the world will begin to work for you. It will begin to move toward you as the mountain moved toward Muhammad. The mushroom said to me once, nature loves courage. Nature loves courage. And I said, what's the payoff on that? And it said, it shows you that it loves courage because it will remove obstacles. You make the commitment, and nature will respond to that commitment by removing impossible obstacles. Dream the impossible dream. And the world will not grind you under. It will lift you up. This is the trick. This is what all these teachers and philosophers who really counted, who really touched the alchemical gold, this is what they understood. This is the shamanic dance in the waterfall. This is how magic is done. It's done by hurling yourself into the abyss and discovering that it's a feather bed. And there's no other way to do it. This is why I have always taken the position that as modern people, you know, we can't go out and set armies marching or launch religions, and who would want to anyhow? But to the people who say adventure has fled, it's all humdrum, I just know, you know, that they have forgotten the 5 grams of psilocybin sitting in their refrigerator. I mean, Magellan may have had excitement rounding the horn, but you in your living room later tonight can put him in the shade if you have the courage to do the things that are necessary to do. And we know what they are.
And of course, the first thing to do is to tell society to fuck off because they don't know what's going on. This is a matter between the person and the plant, the person and the planet. And all the detritus of history, all the games that people have tried to lay on you, you know, they just want to get you down in the ditch that they're in. We know this because Aboriginal societies have never broken the faith. The living gnosis is still there. What I find myself more and more leaning to is sharing the meme of the irrelevance of conservative institutions. History is not a process for which you ask permission. History is just something you make, and then other people pick up the pieces. Henry David Thoreau understood this very well when he wrote his famous treatise on civil disobedience. And now what we are involved in really is a debate about human nature. Who are we? What are we? The French cartoonist Mobius put it very well in his book where he asked the question, is man good? This is what we're going to find out. And my feeling is that it isn't decided yet.
In a world veiled in mystery and driven by the quest for the impossible, join Alex on a transformative journey through the arcane art of transmutation. From ancient practices to the birth of modern science, we will uncover the secrets and stories of history's most enigmatic philosophers. The Natural Born Alchemist podcast presents a series that explores the trials, triumphs, and mystical pursuits of alchemy, the original quest for wisdom and power. Be sure to subscribe and unlock the vault of forgotten knowledge. Don't miss a single episode of this detailed telling of the history of alchemy, where we turn the leaden pages of history into podcast gold. Subscribe to the History of Alchemy on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and watch the video's version on YouTube and Rumble. Go subscribe there to The Natural Born Alchemist. Thank you.
On the 25th of February 2024, earlier this year, Aaron Bushnell, a 25-year-old United States Air Force member, made a harrowing decision to end his life through self-immolation at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. This act, broadcasted live, was not only a tragic event, but a profound statement of protest. Aaron vocalized his vehement opposition to the treatment of Palestinians, declaring his refusal to be complicit in what he described as genocide. Before his tragic act, Aaron made a final call for the liberation of Palestine. Despite the quick actions from Secret Service officers attempting to save him, his protest underscored a deep commitment to his cause. And this story deeply affected me, especially after watching the video, something I regret doing. I shouldn't have watched that, but I saw the uncensored one where he burned up alive on his own will. Anything people do based on their willpower, I always find fascinating. And I think I find it fascinating because there's so much robotic behavior in society from people. Too much like sheepish behavior. So when somebody is like breaking that pattern and doing something extreme, like setting themselves on fire, you know, it is impressive in a way and tragic. I agree with his sentiments regarding the situation in Gaza. But I don't want to discuss the that situation right now. That's not what this episode is about. I want to pivot the conversation towards a broader perspective, notably through the lens of Gnosticism, specifically the figure of Hjaldabaoth, because there's a point to everything I've been saying and playing and sharing in this episode. A metaphor for the illusory nature of our perceived reality. You see, there's something Hjaldabaoth can't do, even though you might think he can do everything because he created the illusion. He enslaved us in this fake reality we find ourselves in, pushing us down from our true selves as divine beings. There's one thing he can't do. He can't trip. He is stuck in his base reality. He's a square, as the hippies would say. And he is doomed to forever be one as well. So that's our weapon. We can trip. And by tripping, we break out of his spell. Now, from this viewpoint, Aaron Bushnell's self-sacrifice transcends a mere act of protest. It represents an intense quest for truth, an attempt to shatter the veils of illusion that binds us, and to reveal something more profound about our existence. Now, while his method was tragically extreme, it invites us to contemplate the lengths we might go to break free from our own illusions. When we are seeking truth, it's always good to find a much safer, less self-destructive path, like, for instance, a heroic dose of mushrooms. That could help humanity to wake up and realize that war and greed and corruption is beneath us. Wake us up to a deeper understanding of our place in the universe and be free from the pathetic reality that Hjaldabaoth, the untrippable god, has put us in. Join me. Follow me in social media on X. Subscribe on YouTube, Rumble. Just search for Natural Born Alchemist. Check out my History of Alchemy series. Let's end with the track. I played it before, but I'm going to play it again. The track Regain Control, because I think the title is fitting for what we've been talking about. And the track is written and performed by Shirobon. See you in the next episode. Freedom is in the mind.
It's the right time
to rise up to the top.
Prime time,
cause we can't get enough.
And fight for
the city that we
to
made.
Take back
the power that you crave.
Right time
to rise up to the top.
Prime time,
cause we can't get enough.
And fight for
the city that we
to
made.
Take back
the power that you crave.
tonight.